Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. So, podcast time. Ariel Free. I met Ariel, I think 2019 in Miami. I was playing a show and she was on holiday out there. And I knew her from Radio One, vaguely. And we kind of kept in touch since then. And since then, her career has just bloomed into this amazing radio touring DJ producer career. And it's been amazing to see. So I asked if she wanted to come on the show and she luckily said yes. She's done some amazing things in her career. She's currently resident in a high in Ibiza for David Guetta's night. She has a show on BBC Radio 1, 8 till 10 p.m. at night in the weekdays. She's also done some amazing things for charity recently, for Comic Relief in the UK. She raised over godly amounts of money, I think £600,000. She did this rave-a-thon on a bike for 5 days, or 5 days of like 10 hours DJing and 10 hours cycling a day. Absolutely mad. We all got into this on the podcast. She is absolutely amazing and a breath of fresh air. I love talking to her. She's a beautiful human being. So enjoy this one, because I definitely did. Without further ado, Ariel Free. Ariel Free.
Hiya, pal.
How's it going?
I mean, it's good. It's manic, but it's good. How's your summer going? Are you sleeping enough?
My summer.
Should we ever sleep enough?
My summer is actually, in comparison, it's pretty chill this year.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is actually nice. It's like, last year I was doing so many back and forths from America to Europe, like,
yeah, I remember that,
like, literally, like,
it was wild
all the time. And this year I'm still doing a lot of back and forths, but it's nowhere near as much as it was. What about you?
You need to have the summers like that, though, don't you? Like, you have to have ones where you're just like, not. I'm okay. I'm pretty much mostly Europe in summer, which is nice. I only did my first couple of gigs in the States in March, like Miami Music Week and whatnot. I'll be back out for like winter. But because of the residency in Ibiza on Friday, it's just getting from Ibiza every Saturday to the next gig.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's direct flights, sometimes it's absolutely not. And you just got to kind of hope that every flight goes on time or waits for you if you are a bit delayed for the connecting flight.
It's such a nightmare, isn't it?
Last year was horrendous. This year, touch wood, no delays so far.
That's good.
Also, there's like direct flights to Scotland, which they didn't have last year. I was like, that's so... Like, that discriminates us against us Scottish ravers. We love a bit of Ibiza. Well, we're not doing direct flights, but they they've amended that this year.
That's probably why, like, backed by popular demand, the Scottish need to rave.
They were all just travelling down to Newcastle, and the Newcastle flights just got annoyed with it. And it's like, no, we can't deal with the tune, and we geez.
Yeah, that is literally a recipe for disaster of raving in the airport.
No matter how early you try and make that flight, they're still going to be there with a bottle in hand, handing it around. And also, we have, because of Brexit, we now have a separate queue in Ibiza when we arrive, because we have to get a stamp on our passport now. And so there's just this constant, like, huge queue for, like, the UK, like, arrivals. And then, like, anyone else who arrives from anywhere else within Europe, like the States or ever, they just sail through security. I'm quite jealous.
It's such a fucking joke, isn't it?
Well, it's just, like, my passport, I had to get renew it because I'd run out of pages. And then I had to get a second one anyway for visas. Mm. And now I've got to get another one because I get a stamp every time. I'm doing 18 dates in my visa. And also, like, most of my gigs are in, like, Croatia, Malta, like, I have to get a stamp for every single one of those stops. Mm-hmm. So, like, in one weekend, I've amalgamated about, like, 8 stamps. Yeah. And it's costing a fortune just to, like, get new pages or get another passport.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And also, and you go to, like, Amsterdam and, like, certain places in Europe where they stamp you in and stamp you out.
Yeah, that's everywhere.
And you're
pretty much everywhere.
Why? Like...
Why?
You don't need to...
Also... You have, like, the Schengen now, which is basically, like, the computer version of it. Yeah. So it's, like, it's all on your computer. You know when I've entered into Europe and when I've come back out of it.
Yep.
So it's, like, you don't really need to, like, do a little stamp. It feels very old school. I remember when I was a kid, like, waiting for the stamp. Like, you know, when you go to your holidays, like, Benidorm. But now I'm just a bit, like, it's just an extra bit of admin that we don't need in our lives.
Yeah, I totally agree. My passport, like, you know when you go back through London Heathrow and it's all, like, electronic and you put your passport in? My passport, like, absolutely spazzed out all the machines and I had to go to, like, see the custom officer, and then he put it in his machine and it completely, like, broke his computer as well.
What?
And he was like, do you have another passport? I was like, yeah, here's my other passport. He was like, just use this next time, because he's like, your passport isn't, like, the machine is not liking your passport at all. And I was like, why?
I arrived once, me and Melly were on the same flight back from a gig somewhere, and, like, he sailed through security and mine came up, like, you have to go to the desk because my chip wasn't working on my older one. And then this woman at the border was like, oh, can you just look at me? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then she got over here. She's like, I need you not to smile now. And I was like, yeah, right, whatever. And she's like, this isn't you. And I was like, what? And then basically my passport, when they scanned it, had come up with someone else's photo.
No way.
So then she was, like, getting someone else. She's like, look at this. She's like, this is not funny. I need you to take this seriously. And I was like, well, I'm obviously laughing because it's my passport. That's my picture. And I just said to Christy, I was like, can you go on, babe? Don't wait for this. I was like, I feel like I'm going to be here for a long time. And she just was so annoyed that I was, like, just not... I was just finding the whole situation, like, hilarious. Mm. So I was like, well, what do you want me to do? It's not my problem that your computer isn't working properly.
Yeah, also, you're British. Like, let me in the country.
Yeah, exactly. I had another gig to go to that day, and I was like, I'm going to just keep chilled about this because I can find a really stressful situation, or I can just laugh at the situation. And then she was like, next time, you need to make sure that you've got, like, other photo ID with you. And I was like, surely my photo in my passport, like, is sufficient enough to show that, like, that is me. Just because it isn't showing the same photo on your computer, that's not my problem.
It's also, like, anyway, the, like, highest level of ID that anyone can ever get.
Yeah. You have, and she's like, do you mean you don't have another form of ID? And I was like, oh, I don't have a driver's license at the moment. So, like, I don't have any other ID that you set my bank card, maybe.
Oh, these customs people are hilarious. Have you experienced them in America often?
No, I've actually, so far, I had, like, nice experience in America.
That's good.
Someone warned me about Miami taking ages, like, that customs. But I did have to queue for a bit. And you have this global entry thing, right?
Yeah.
Apparently that's going to save me a lot of time, but I have to arrive into the States to get it from one of the airports. I can't get it online. But so far, it's been, like, easy breezy. One of my friends is from Liverpool, and whenever she gets stopped, she just says that she's John Lennon's, like, long-distance cousin, and they love it. And they just, like, let her through. Like, no way! You're related to Beatle? And then, yeah, she gives them this whole spiel, and they always believe it, and it's just, like, sails through.
Who's famous that's Scottish that you could kind of pull that card out?
I don't know, maybe I could say Andy Murray is my brother.
They're not gonna fucking know who Andy Murray is.
Really? I can't say Calvin Harris. maybe Lewis Capaldi. They all know Lewis Capaldi.
Yeah, Lewis Capaldi could work.
My wee brother.
That's hilarious. Yeah, no, American immigration is just another level of annoying people.
Have you seen that Twitter page, like DJ's moaning?
Yeah.
And like that's one of the things that always comes up when someone's like moaning. I think I saw Richie Amo the other day like moaning about it. And then it was just like they just repost him and you just see like DJ's moaning again and repost. I'm like, ah, because I was trying to get my bags from a flight that gone missing.
Yeah.
And it was Bulane. And I was like, hey Bulane, do you want to reply? It's like my emails and my online chat and my phone calls, please. And someone's like, oh, DJ's moaning again. And I was like, well, this is serious. Like, lost all my stuff. I'm allowed to have a go at someone for losing all of my. It was like the shortest flight ever. It was from Barcelona to Ibiza. Like, it's literally 40 minutes. How can you lose my bags? And my flight is like less than an hour.
Because you're flying with Vueling and you're flying from Barcelona to Ibiza. That is exactly why.
Yeah, they're like, we'll just sail it over. I'll be there before you anyway.
Talking about losing shit, how the fuck did you leave your laptop in Glastonbury?
So, in classic like freestyle, Glastonbury was like a lot of work for me this year. I got asked really last minute to do the TV coverage, which for me as a broadcaster was like proper like dream moment. Like
amazing.
When I started radio and like getting into this whole weird and wonderful world, like one of the main aims was like to be part of Glastonbury and to be part of Brits. And then I was already booked to DJ and I host the Westfield stage in between all the bands. So like they have like a signing stage. I always want to encourage people to go over and meet like the acts, and they have some incredible acts like Solange and Anderson .Paak and Lyle Carner. And like for people in the UK, like they don't often get those opportunities to meet like such incredible like talent. Damn. I think Lyle Carner spent 2 hours at the signing tent. It was amazing. Wow. So I was already booked on that. And then I got asked the TV stuff and then the DJ stuff. And I was like, but I'd not given myself enough time to really nail my DJ sets. And one of them was going out with Monkey back to back in the radio. And the second one was the Glade. It was the biggest stage I've done so far. Last year was my first year DJing at Glastonbury. And it was like 4,000 capacity tent. The Glade can hold up to like 8,500.
Yeah.
I was really nervous. And I just was like that typical thing of overthinking everything, brought my laptop with me. So when I was driving down, I was just like going over my tunes, like getting my cue points, like figuring out what I wanted to do. And I was like, oh, this is such a bad idea to bring my laptop to Glastonbury. What have I done? But and as experiences go, Glastonbury is one festival where I think all your valuables are the safest. Like I've never known anyone to be like mugged or like robbed or like their tents being like licked in and whatnot. Like, people are just like in a bubble of love. And because I was like, right, I don't want to lose this. I hid it under like my mattress and then like wrapped it up and hid it. And I hid it so well that when I left and we did like the big like check, I just didn't lick under the mattress. And so then I didn't realize until the Monday night and I had a gig in Mallorca on the Tuesday. And it was when I was like packing myself in Mallorca and I was like, where's my... and was like Glastonbury. Manically emailed them and it's just this like generic info at Glastonbury. Like I was like, oh my god, someone please find this. And I was like, I was in tent 27 in the interstage area, just hidden under the mattress. And they'd actually like packed down the tent and like just left the mattress. I think they just like slot them all like this. And so they had to like find it out and then find it hidden under the mattress. And they're like, yeah, we've got it. But that was like 3 days later. I should have got it when I went from New York to Ibiza and I was gigging all weekend. So I should have got it 2 days ago. It didn't arrive. And then it should have been like delivered last night. And I got that classic, like, we attempted to deliver. And I'm like, well, you didn't because I was in all day. So I don't know how that's worked. But fingers crossed, I need it for my gigs as you can because there's so much music I've been sent this week that I really want to get out. And I've just finished a tune as well. So I was just like, because I'm in the studio and I was like, I really need like to get this and download it on my sticks. But yeah, it'll turn up. Fingers crossed.
It will. I love that you left your laptop at Glastonbury though. That's just fucking
I know,
amazing.
That's mad. When I didn't tell my management until this morning. So I was like, it'll be here. Fine, they don't need to know. And then I was like, so you know Zoom I'm doing with Will. Do I definitely need a laptop?
when Terry messaged me, I was like, how? Like, how is that even possible?
Oh, don't. I'm actually quite good at not losing. Do you lose things?
No, I'm really OCD.
You're really organized.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good trait to have.
I
think that works for you in the studio as well, doesn't it, having OCD?
It annoys me so much if I lose something. Like, I had this, like, water bottle that was just part of my life for years. And I was, like, doing some crazy touring this year. And I just left it on the plane. And
no.
It annoyed me so much. And just little things that really annoy me. Like I've left like laptop chargers in hotel rooms. I've done it once.
Classic.
And I'm just like, Well, I it actually ruins my day. So
no, see, I lose charges all the time. And then I'm like really organized, like emailing the hotel and be like, hey, I left my charges. Any chance you can post back to me? And then they just flat out ignore you. But I left my AirPods case, and there is like my friend's, like they had a cover on them, and it was my friend's brand.
Yeah.
And she doesn't do it anymore. And she'd like put my initials on it. So I always knew they were mine, you know, if you're backstage, wherever, like no one could take them. And I'd left them in that front pocket on the plane. And it was just the case. And I was like, I really want this case. I was just watching it on my, like, find my, like, just flying to, like, the princess. I was like, I know it's still on this plane. Please go have it. And, like, no one got back to me.
Really?
And it's so expensive to replace a charger pack, by the way. Like, any sort of, like, Apple device. They just quid. Get, you know. They don't even give you a charger with your phone.
No.
That's so bad. They're just like, no, you should have one. And I get it, it's good for, like, you know, being greener and not, like, having waste. But, like, the amount I lose charges on the regular, because they're white and they usually blend into the plugs and wall. I just, like, when I do my idiot check, I just never see it. Now I've got a green one.
Oh, really? They don't do it. Yeah. They don't do it to be greener. They do it to make money, let's be honest.
Yeah. So you have to then buy a charger that's, like, 80 quid. And you're like, what? I think, wasn't it Brazil tried to ban it? They said that it wasn't actually a full product. So Brazil went against Apple and were, like, refused to sell iPhones.
Really?
Unless they supplied a charger, because they were like, you're selling a product that doesn't work without this item.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Did you hear how much Apple's worth the other day? It came out.
I don't know.
It's literally worth more than like Great Britain, and they're worth more than the whole of the German stock market put together.
Wow.
How's the summer going? Anyway, tell me about this residency. I know I briefly saw you in Ushuaia the other day.
You're in Ushuaia. You just support Calvin, hadn't you? So it's quite nice that, because he has everyone. I usually get to see everyone who's played for Calvin, and there's like a half hour break between when Ushuaia closes and High opens. Yeah. But no, it kind of dates back to 2 years ago, so 2021, Ibiza had like been closed for 2 years, and then they were trying to reopen when you were allowed to like dine outside or like drink outside at tables. And Ushuaia were trying out Palmarama, this new night. It was like Geta playing and Luciano, and I got invited to support Geta at one of those days. They kind of wanted to see what it was like, and actually it was really lovely that it was the staff that fed back to the bookers and were like, Aria was sick, like you should definitely book her again.
That's cool.
And because of that, they booked me for a second date, which was wicked. And it was very strange because the island had like really suffered, obviously. The whole economy had like flattened, and like no visitors, no flights, and people really wanted to dance, but you were still restricted. And they had like police had like drones flying over to make sure people were sat at their tables. But obviously when you hear dance music, you want to get up and dance. And then I did the second date, and then they asked me if I'd be interested in supporting Geta's new night, Future Rave, which was going to be different from his usual Monday, FMIF. And
You can swear.
Yeah, but I don't know why. I like saying FMIF, because I feel like it's such a like long established brand, but I've always called it that. Like,
have you really? I've never heard anyone call it that.
Have you not? No. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe because it's the radio training in me.
100%.
And I was like, well, what's Future Rave? And they were like, well, he's more kind of, he's going to go darker, a bit more like kind of techno route. And I was like, well, I don't play techno.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we just need someone to start the party, because Calvin's going to be opposite. We don't want like the first DJ in the main room to be like warm up. We want them to go in and get people dancing.
Yeah.
And so I did 16 dates for that last year. And Geta and Jan and everyone at High like was really super impressed that they like instantly asked me back. And for me, it's amazing. Like, it's been voted the number one club in the world for a reason. The staff are all incredible. Like, it's the most slick logistics that I've ever like dealt with. Mm-hmm. You know, they really look after you. I didn't really have many guests each week. You were quite lone rangers, I think, DJs. We're always on the road, and like, it's not often that like loads of friends will come and see you. But I had like my second to last date last September, and I was like, look, I've got my 10 girls coming.
Yeah.
Is there any way we can get some sort of transport for where we're going to be to the club? And they're like, we're going to get you a minibus. And I was like, don't worry, they're going to be really well behaved. And they turned up to the club. We'd gone to this lovely Mexican restaurant in San Jose. Well, I don't drink before sets. I would get too nervous. And I don't drink during sets either. Like, if I want to drink after, fine. But I want to know that I've done the job well.
Mm.
And they turned up and they just started chanting on this like bus, like, Ari, 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 fucking free, Ari. And they were like walking out. And I was like, oh my God. And then Gabby, who's like one of the most amazing people at High, she kind of runs the show there, the Gaga Challenge. She's like, is this your friend? And I was like, yes, you know how I said they were going to be really well behaved, but really excited. And they might have like just had too much tequila. And then it was brilliant because they were behind me in the booth. Like usually it's just me and my own. And there's like these weird sofas that are for like Geta and all his people. But no one ever sits there for me or like dances there for me. So it's just, it was so nice to have like this buzz and like my friends dancing with me. And it was like, it was such a nice way to round off what had been like the craziest summer. Yeah. And then, yeah, I'm back this year every Friday, 18 days. Well, 17, because I had already booked for Glastonbury, so I couldn't make that one. And then, yeah, I'll be doing an ants in the summer for them as well, which is one of my favourite nights, actually, in Ireland.
Yeah.
Bar Glitter Box. I love a bit of Glitter Box.
So are you just travelling in and out for it, or are you staying there?
Yeah. Every Saturday I have a flight somewhere else. And they always laugh about it because I always, like, finish my set at 1:30. And they're like, do you want to go now? And I'm like, yeah, I've got a flight tomorrow at 7. And they're like, you never stay. But I did the first opening night. They asked me to do the Wild Corner, which was the toilets, which for anyone who hasn't been to High, it's just the most fun club. You go in thinking you're going to go to the toilet and there's just loads of people raving and there's like hidden decks in the middle. And because it's kind of like, it's really dug into the ground. There's someone who's 5'3". People don't see that there's someone DJing there.
Yeah.
But I did that on the first night and it was really exciting. But I was so knackered from having like done the main room, like, and I'm quite energetic behind the decks. And then, yeah, I went straight into like 4 hours solid and was just like dancing around by the end of it. I was like, oh my God. And then I forgot my flight was at 7 a.m. So I had like 2 hours sleep for the next gig. But usually I'm quite good. I recognized last year just how, if you don't look after yourself, like how different the experience can be being on the road traveling. And if you just like go ham and party and just never sleep, I'm not into that. I don't sleep enough anyway because of my radio show hours anyway. So I'm very aware of the importance of sleep and just getting it where I can.
How do you cope with the sleep? Like, what's your like routine?
I'm a serial disco napper.
Really?
I can fall asleep anywhere. Yeah, because so I've been on Radio 1 for nearly 6 years now. And when I started, I was covering the early breakfast shifts, which was live from 4 to 7 a.m. So I was having to get up at 2:30 in the morning. Mm. And then I moved to weekend early breakfast again, 4 to 7 a.m. So another 2:30 a.m. start for like 18 months. And then I moved back to midweek, but then I'm now live from 5 to 7 and I do a dance show, which I pre-record for the next morning. And that'll go out between 4 and 5 a.m. So now I can sleep in to like 3:20 a.m.
Yeah.
And there's such a difference between getting up at 2:30 in the morning and 3:30 in the morning. 2:30 feels like the middle of the night. 3:30 feels just really super early in the morning.
Yeah.
But I have things like my phone goes away an hour before bed. Like I've started reading again, or even like my biggest thing is if I'm making music on my laptop and I just get into it and I'm like there like 8:30, like bopping around, I'm all hyper from like the beat that I've made. It's like trying to wind myself back down and being like, oh no, now I need to sleep. But yeah, there's little tips and tricks, isn't there? Like earplugs in the plane.
Yeah.
Always get the window seat so you can like put your head to sleep on something. Mm. I've seen these things. I don't know if you've seen them. So you know everyone gets the big neck braces, but I don't find them comfortable because it makes my neck jut forward.
They're not
so I always
good
get like
for
a
you.
Crick in my neck.
Yeah, they're not good for you.
They're not good. No. But I saw this woman had this like, it's like a band that you like strap around your neck, really thin. And then it just has a bit of wire in the top. So your head just like rests on the wire.
Oh, really?
So you don't bob fox. I'm a head bobber.
That's the worst.
I'm like banging into people. I once like fell into the aisle of a flight, like on the way back from Ibiza. I was on the aisle seat. I think because the flight was really busy, so I hadn't been able to put the window seat. And I was like going so far to my right, that base, and I was in such deep sleep that I toppled over the armrest and actually landed it in the aisle. And I just remember, like, I woke up and looked at it, and everyone was just staring at me. I was like, this is horrendous.
I'm an aisle seat, man. I'm an aisle seat. I'm not a fan of the window.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I'm like on my own in the corner next to a window. I don't mind an aisle seat in a long haul flight because I like to get up and walk.
Yeah.
And I don't want to ever wake anyone up or like have to clamber over people. So I will do it for that. But it's just like, someone's always going to bang into you, aren't they? Or like the trolley's going to hit your foot. Or...
Yeah, true.
I
much prefer the aisle. I like to just be able to escape if I need to. That getting up at 3:30 in the morning and getting up at 2:30 in the morning. What time are you going to bed?
This is probably the biggest question I get asked.
Yeah.
I probably should be going to bed about 7:38. The issue I have with that is if I go to bed too early, my body wakes up at like 10:30, 11, and like, nap's over.
Yeah.
Whereas if I push it, what I've found is if I go to bed at 9, I'm usually asleep by like 9:30, 9:45, which will give me just over 5 hours sleep before my alarm comes on.
Yeah.
It means I'll probably sleep through. Whereas if I go to bed too early, I will just wake up and then I'm wide awake from 11 until 3, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
I don't have coffee. I love coffee, but I don't have it after 2 o'clock. I know I won't sleep. And even there's certain foods, like someone once told me that red pepper is not good for you before you try and sleep.
Oh, really?
And I would always make like a nice salad and whatnot. Yeah, it's apparently something about what it does to your digestive system. And so I've cut things like that out, like raw onions, not good before like trying to sleep. Someone also told me as well, like you have to eat 2 hours before you go to sleep in order for your body to be like completely like rested.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like eating and then you go to sleep, it just doesn't do its job properly.
Yeah.
So I'm quite keen. I won't ever get, you know, these things that everyone has, these Aura rings now. Someone's like, oh, you should get that to like map your sleep. And I'm like, I already know I don't get enough sleep. Yeah. So why would I want to have that hammered, like rammed down?
I've got one. I track mine.
But yeah, I've got like, it's on your phone anyway, isn't it? Like,
kind of,
the thing is those rings would be amazing because you can decide like, actually I need longer sleep. I don't have the beauty, especially in the week, of being like, oh shit, I need to get 7 or 8 hours sleep. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. No,
so
I totally agree.
It just makes me feel worse about the situation.
Yeah, I've been tracking I have a Whoop strap, which is like just, it's not even a what.
A Whoop strap?
Yeah, it's a Whoop strap. So it's like, you get a lot of
what a
like,
name.
I know, it's fucking amazing, whoop, right? Whoop. It gives you a lot of data, but realistically it's like, because I train a lot as well, so it kind of tracks all my training and calories and everything like that. And it's really interesting, but every single day it's like you haven't slept enough. And then you go listen to like a sleep.
I don't need that.
Yeah, then you go listen to a sleep podcast and they're like, you're going to die young if you don't get 8 hours sleep, or you're going to get Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's. And you're like, yeah, it's probably not healthy for me to remind myself of this every day. But I still keep it up.
I had a chat with Dom Dollar about that. He was talking about like how he went down a bit of a like rabbit hole of just like the effects of not getting enough sleep. And he was like telling me about all the science. I was like, I just don't want to know this because there's nothing I can do about it at the moment. I really love and enjoy my job, and I'm doing the best I can of like the sleep that I can get. I don't want to make myself feel guilty or like worry about what might happen, you know, because it could happen even if you got like 10 hours sleep, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I just think someone was like, you can never like regain the sleep debt. But then another podcast said, oh, you can absolutely catch up on the sleep. And what I found, I've just changed shift on the radio for 2 months, and I'm now doing 8 to 10 p.m. I thought I was going to feel like the most amazing moment in the world.
No.
I've had like 3 nights of 7 hours sleep, and actually my body feels worse for it because it's suddenly gone, right, this is actually what you need now.
Yeah.
Like I'm not running on adrenaline. I'm not like on that. And so now I'm recognizing I actually need to like give myself 8 or 10 hours, and I've got the time now to do that at the moment, midweek. So I'm allowing myself to like catch up. Like I spoke to Grimmy, who used to do the breakfast show on Radio 1, and he did the breakfast show for 5 years. So he was getting up at 5 a.m., maybe 4:30. And when he finished, he went on a 2-week holiday. And for the first 5 days of his holiday, he slept for 13 hours a night.
Wow.
Because it was his body suddenly going, oh, finally. Yeah. And everyone thought it was something was wrong with him. And it wasn't. It was just the sleep deprivation. It was like, right, here, we're going to get this back now.
Mm.
And he said he felt 10 times better, but he's just giving himself the time to be like, like, I remember once I went to Ibiza, I was so shattered. I'd had like 4 gigs in a row, got there. And I wasn't there for a gig. It wasn't until the next day I'd got there the night before. I just didn't set an alarm. And I slept for 10 hours. And I was like, rock and roll, kid. Gone to Ibiza, slept for 10 hours. Absolute heaven.
Yeah. It's weird. Sleep's very strange. I have this really weird relationship with it because I suck at sleeping. Like, even when I have time to sleep, I'm so bad at sleeping. Like, let's say for instance this morning I went to bed at 11:30 and I woke up at 3:30 and I just couldn't go back to sleep. Just like couldn't go back to sleep.
That used to that used to be me. I was a terrible sleeper before I started the early breakfast shift. I would get like even just 5 hours sleep on my own accord because I was an overthinker. I'd go to bed with a thousand things going on my head. Yeah. It'd take me a good 2 hours to get to sleep. I'd wake up really early. And it wasn't until I started the early breakfast shift that I actually started like napping. And like I could never nap in a day. Now I can put my head down and I'll wake up after an hour. It's lovely. And I think it's just me recognizing, okay, well, I'm exhausted, so I'm going to give myself an opportunity where I can. But you must be with the touring and everything as well. I think something switched, and I don't know if it's because I'm just constantly like on that jet lag vibe.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, I can't quite put my finger, but I was a terrible sleeper before I started a shift that now requires me to get up at 20 past 3.
Yeah, I think for me it started when I was 17 when I moved to Ibiza. Since then.
Really?
Like, I sleep terrible ever since then. I like, if...
Do you have the Calm app?
What's that? Calm. Oh, the Calm app. Sorry.
Yes. Do you know, I always say that and no one ever understands my accent. The Calm.
Calm,
app.
Darling. No, I don't.
I really rate it.
Really?
They do like bedtime stories, but they also do like soundscapes and whatnot. It's like 45 for the year. And there's a bedtime story from Matthew McConaughey, and I've only ever made it through the first 5 minutes. It's 35 minutes long. It's brilliant.
Really?
You find voices that like make you, it's almost like hypnotic, because there was one from Cillian Murphy, who's like one of my favorite actors. He's amazing. I'm going to love this. And I was just like wide awake the whole time. But there's a really one called like Deep Rest.
Yeah.
And I've still not made it past 7 minutes.
Really?
It's so good. Yeah.
Do you, do you just pass out or do you turn it off?
You put it on and it'll slowly peter out. Okay. And then it basically just stops like playing after it. Like, it's like a 30-minute episode, or you can get like hour-long ones. You can get ones that are like rainfall or like forest, like wind or whatnot. And you find it works for you. Like, I can't go to bed with like rainfall because it makes me the toilet. It just makes me need a wee. I just find myself jiggling.
I have to have like a fan on as well.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, like I'm like.
See, I like pitch black, deadly silent. That's what I like. But then in the Calm app is like really soothing. Honestly, try it; it will change your life.
Yeah, yeah. I might give that. I'm literally will give anything a go to like try and sleep.
Yeah,
anything. It's like. It's part of our life, sadly, that we don't sleep just because of our jobs. And especially for you as well. Like, that must be mental doing your schedule.
Yeah, I mean, people say that, but I haven't ever got to a point. There was just before the pandemic, I was doing my morning radio show. I was doing an evening podcast that wouldn't finish till 1. I was getting home, having 45 minutes sleep, doing the show, getting back and doing 2 hours sleep. My average sleep went down to 2 hours, 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's not good.
And that was like after a spell of like 4 weeks. And I remember things were going in my diary and I had to like turn around and say to my management time, like, guys, you, in the space of 48 hours, you've given me the biggest break I have is 4 hours.
Yeah.
When am I meant to sleep? Yeah. Like, this is not okay. And I'm not very good at complaining. It's taken a lot for me. I never want to be the person that moans, because I don't like conflict, and I don't want anyone to ever think that I'm a dickhead.
Mm.
And so that was overpowering me, just being honest with people and saying, I'm struggling with this. Yeah. And even then, like, I mentioned it and they're like, well, can you just get through the next 24 hours and we'll sort it? It's like, but you're asking me to work on 2 hours sleep for 24 hours and 4 different jobs.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where I was like, something's got to give now. And at that point, I was still doing some like TV bits, but I only ever wanted to do TV to get me on Radio 1. Like, Radio 1 was a dream for me.
Yeah.
And I recognized there were certain things I had to do to get me on that station, because all I wanted to do was be on air and talk about music.
Yeah.
I love music. It's what it's always been about. Where you have to show them that you're bringing them an audience, or like there's a young generation who enjoy what you have to say, or your curation. And, you know, so I did like for music, and I was doing like a podcast for ITV for like the biggest like youth focused show. And all those things definitely helped me get on Radio 1. But then I continued all those things whilst I was doing this early breakfast shift on Radio 1 with the DJing at the weekend. And it was like, something's got to give. And I was even saying yes to DJ gigs in the week and then going straight into the studio and then being live for 2 hours. And you have to have your wits and energy about you in the studio. Like, I'm the first point of conversation people have in their day. And often it's like the end of people's night shift, or people get up super early for work or commuting or going to gym really early. And they're having conversations with you. And if I can't give something back, or like, you know, give them the right sort of entertainment, or, you know, make sure that they've started the day or ending a day in the right tone, I've not done my job properly. And I couldn't do that by doing a 4-hour DJ set and then going straight to the studio.
Totally.
So I had to stop the midweek DJ sets. And then now it's like, yeah, radio and then the gigs of the weekend. And I can pack it in. I can get about 4 gigs a weekend if I stay in Europe. And then also they're really good now with like holiday. We didn't have holiday before.
Yeah.
And I never took holiday. I was just like, I don't work, I don't get paid.
Yeah.
And now, whereas I have a luxury of having holiday and being having holiday pay, which is like something as a self, someone who's been self-employed for 16 years, I've never had.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can actually take this day off on Monday and not have to worry. So yeah, like things have got easier, and I think, and people, as like conversations about mental health and physical well-being are like more, like, you know, much wider spoken about and globally recognized. I think people, if I had to turn around and say, I cannot do the show on Monday, I am exhausted, like I need a checkout, they will be totally understanding of that. I've not done that, but maybe just having the safety of knowing that they understand now, like it's recognized. Whereas back in the day, radio presenters did that shift, did my shift. I think Vanessa Fells did it for 12 years.
That's mad.
12 years. Mad. And we had a conversation about it. And when she left Radio 2, she's like, I've done early breakfast in 12 years. I turned around to my bosses at Radio 1. I was like, just so you know, I'm not doing 12 years.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing is, like, you're 100% right. Your role doing early morning is... You have kind of like a responsibility to be the bright person that everyone hears first thing in the morning, right? And that's a big responsibility to have on your hands. But like, it's a lot of work. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's as my years in the radio have gone on, and what I've recognized is that actually you can still be honest and come on here and be like, oh, I had the worst night's sleep ever. Like literally pour coffee into my eyes now. And then you have that. You have other people who feel exactly the same. They're like, yeah, same. So we now do this thing on Tuesday called Double Bag Tuesday. So it's like, you cannot just have one tea bag and your cup on a Tuesday morning. It has to be two. So we have to double bag it, lads. And it's like, now people just send me like, they're like, I like their menus of coffee. Someone's like, I've got like a vanilla latte with an extra scoop of sweetener in there. And it's like, it's just something to give us all a bit of a like check-in. But, the thing that really hammered home, like, radio is a public service.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
And nothing highlighted that more than the pandemic. Yeah. I was on the radio for the whole time of the pandemic. We were seen as key workers. And I remember being there on the radio at that time, and people who were up at that time, because everyone had to stop working, going into the office. Mm. It was the emergency delivery drivers. It was those delivering medicine or stuff to the grocery shops. And there were people isolating on their own. And I remember it wasn't bearing the weight. It was like we were all terrified and we were all in it together. And I remember just thinking, right, I've never needed to do my job better than now, like better than I have now. Like, I want to give everyone like an hour of bangers. It's going to like make them forget what's going on, you know. And we did this thing called the free hour, and anyone could choose whatever song they wanted. And that was like unheard of on radio.
Yeah.
And we were just like, this is about you now. This is like just letting you escape and like just having like our moment together. And I just remember, I'll never forget the wave of us being like terrified and wondering what was going on, and then kind of feeling a little bit better about it, and then be terrified again, and then people getting like just really annoyed about being locked down. And we were all together. But more than anything, people turned to the radio because it is a companion. It is someone. I listened to the radio as a kid because when I was like being a geek and studying for my exams, Zane Lowe was my best mate on the video. Like, he was the one who was like telling me about the Hives and the Strokes and all these amazing bands, and that made me feel like I was part of his gang. And I think that's why I've always wanted to be in radio, because for me it was like my best pal growing up.
Yeah, totally. I had exactly the same thing with Zane. Like,
it's just emotion. You cannot get emotion from a playlist. We can all make playlists and like have them on in the background, whatnot. The thing about radio is you get emotion and you get companionship. Yeah. And curation as well. You can have an algorithm tell you what they think you might want to hear, but nothing. I enjoy nothing more than putting like Benji B on and him helping me discover this new act that I've never heard of. Yeah. I'm suddenly obsessed with, and you know, or like that brand new like weapon that like Danny Herr was just like banged into show, and I'm like, love that. So I'm a proper radio geek, and for me, it's so. I think it like it definitely helps. What's what influenced my DJing, because when I DJ, I don't do the same set a lot. Like I will often shuffle tunes because I'm constantly searching out new music and new acts and whatnot. Yeah. Then every week I'm like making myself work even harder because I'm just like firing in all these new tracks that I've heard. And then I don't know whether they work in a live environment or not, but I'm going to test them out. And then I freak out if they don't. And I'm like, why didn't work? But yeah, like I think often I worry that people don't know what my sound is when I DJ, or even when I'm making music, none of my tracks sound the same. But yeah. I think that's because my whole life has always been about like radio and curation, discovering the new.
Yeah.
That and not being like into one sound.
That makes sense though. And I think also.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's a lot of radio DJs. Let's use Zane for an example. When Zane used to DJ, like his sets went all over the shop. And I think that's okay. That's you.
It's totally okay. I remember he used to tear it up on his DJ sets. And I saw him like you say, one time he'd be like smacking in like Prodigy and Skrillex and all that stuff. The next thing it was like Mark Ronson and more like, you know, what's like Farside Running and everything. It's like just even like going to like a more hip hop vibe. But I used to love that. And the same with Annie Mack. I used to love her sets because she would have a DJ set that would have the tracks that I'd heard her play in her radio show, but then also like club bangers.
Yeah.
And it just, for me, I love songs of words. Like I saw someone tweet the other day and they're like, I'm just so sick and tired of seeing DJs play like classic tunes. Like surely like a DJ set is about you discovering and not knowing the track ID. And I was like, for me, that's two different audiences.
Yeah.
I'm a type of girl that wants to go and watch Calvin Harris, Fatboy Slim, you know, as well as like your Screams and your Odin and Fatsos and, and are like, for me, like Gorgon City, a prime example, where they can like put in one, like their more radio accessible tunes, but also like fill it in with like their more underground, like melodic or techno vibes. And I'm like, and that, for me, I really enjoy that. I don't necessarily enjoy a DJ set that has no vocal.
Yeah.
Or like just stays on a level.
I agree.
And I know that some people just love that and they just want to be there for hours at that. Whereas I'm like, give me light and shade and like gospel and, you know, and a big high note and a and then like going back down. And it doesn't mean that, and it took me years. So I was so paranoid that I was never, I've never been part of the clique.
Yeah.
I've never been part of like the groups that like get to play Circle Loco every week get to go and play Sub Club in Glasgow every week. I've never been part of that. And the minute I realised that I wasn't one of the cool kids, it was actually the minute my career started like flourishing, because I was unapologetic about the fact that I'm going to whap in the new Peggy Goo song as well as like the underground track from Richie Ahmed.
Yeah.
So
I think it's really important. It's really interesting you say that, because especially growing up in the UK, like there's the UK music scene is very clicky. And the European scene is very clicky.
I remember thinking like, why wouldn't they book me? Like, why wouldn't they have me? And then it's like, I can still fucking DJ. And like, what, just because I'm playing a record that maybe has like got over a million streams now, that's okay. Because over a million people have enjoyed that. And also like, I'm not here, like I do love a sweaty basic, but actually where I thrive is in a festival environment. Mm. I love playing festivals. What I grew up on, I'm bloody conceived at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just like, as you get older, I think you start recognizing actually, I can be okay and unapologetic about this is my lane,
yeah,
and I'm going to stay in this lane. And if you want to get on board, great. If you don't, that's fine. I'm not really here to play like your underground club for the rest of my life until I'm 70. Yeah. And you know, I want to explore the world. I want to do all the stages and all the festivals. And then, and yeah, I think once you find, when you have that like revelation, your DJ sets become better because you're not overthinking everything or thinking about other people's opinions.
Yeah.
Just fucking playing what that you want and what you think is going to get people dancing.
Yeah, it's really important. And I think it's really, without sounding like an absolute douchebag, it's like a really mature way to look at your career as an artist for anybody to just categorically be like, this is me and I don't give a fuck about anybody else. Like it takes so long to get there. And I don't know if you still battle with it ever, because like I'm there right now. I'm where you're at. But also like I still have that battle a little bit sometimes where it's like, oh, why are they not booking me? Why are they not doing this?
Yeah.
Why are they not doing that? It's like, I know that this sounds really arrogant and I'm not saying this in an arrogant way. I know that I'll smash this better than any of the people on the lineup, but like, but just cause I don't fit in with the clique, it's like,
it's also like, I'm quite ambitious.
Yeah.
And so like, I'll write a list of like places that I want to play and I'm like, this, and they're like, well, probably not this year. And I'm like, why not this year?
Yeah. I'm exactly the same.
Why not this year?
Yeah.
Why are you telling me no?
Yeah.
You should be the first person telling me no. Ask them, see what happens. I've always been like that. And I'm like, I don't know if that's probably quite bad for people working with me, but I constantly said, I've just seen this like being a night. Do you reckon I need a sport like that person? Like,
yeah.
I'm very active in pursuing like gigs that I want to be involved in. But yeah, it's that thing of, I had a gig the other day and I'd really worked on my set. It was a big deal. And Paris I was playing for, has a lot of people around them. And I remember coming on stage, thought I'd smashed it, I was really happy. It got a bit darker than I usually do, but it was like the environment I was in, like it, I thought that's what I wanted to do. That was my focus or like my kind of vision for that gig. I was really proud that I'd like nailed this set. It was probably one of the most underground sets I've done, a bit darker, a bit moodier, and came off like buzzing. And I was just chatting away to one of the team of like the big star, shall we say. And I was like, you know, you guys happy? And they were like, actually, if we're honest, you went a bit too hard.
Yeah.
And it really threw me because I was like, fuck. Oh, fuck, I didn't get it right. I didn't get it right, even though I'd spent so long. But then I was chatting to someone a couple of weeks ago about it and they were like, well, why are you asking them? They do their finances. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, but then for the 2 weeks after that, my gigs were really like all over the place because I was so assured that I'd like nailed this set. And then someone was like, nah. And then I was like, oh, fuck. I was so way off the mark. I then questioned my next four gigs. I was just sitting here. I didn't know what was right and what was working. And then had this horrible, like, overthinking spell. And then I kind of got myself out of it a bit. And was like, no, you can do this. You can get back into it. And then I found my groove again. But you do have things, like, that can really thrill you.
Yeah.
Like, I did a gig the other day that was going really well. And then the tech ops were like, oh shit, we're really sorry, we've actually set up the wrong decks for like the headliner. And I was like, cool, you can do that after I come off. And they were like, no, we need to do it now whilst you're playing, so you need to move on to different decks. And I was like, lads, I've got 20 minutes left.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and it was just that thing like, but we need to do this for him. And I was like, that's cool, but I am here in my own right.
Yeah, yeah.
And you fucked up, I haven't.
Yeah.
Like, can you just give me like 20 minutes and you can quickly sort it out after? And then they're like, no, we want you to move on to this. And I was like, okay, well, you just walk me through what you need me to do then. And then they didn't tell me to put my USB in the new deck. So like, oh yeah, they're all linked. So a lot of times they start playing out of like that deck from this mixer. And then it didn't. And so then I had to like have this shitty thin loop for like 5 seconds, like what was it, like 20 seconds while I was trying to quickly manically. And I was like, I just needed you to tell me like, and then it fucked up. And then I felt really shit after what was a really good gig. And I did wonder to myself, I mean, it wouldn't happen to a headliner, but also I just wondered to myself, if there's an element of me being a girl, like, cause I have that a lot.
Yeah.
And I've experienced a lot of shitty moments of like men not taking me seriously.
Yeah.
My first ever warehouse project should have been the best gig of my life. And I walked away in tears. It's when the CDJ, the 3000s had just come out and the first phase of them had like had this weird, like, oh, they're all formatted wrong.
Yeah.
And someone had warned me, hi, HAII, you know that DJ, she's amazing. She was like,
she's great.
Be careful on these like 3000s because they're just not, they're fucking up.
Yeah.
And I like had a few cue points on my track, and for one reason or another, every time I hit a cue point, it would go back to the first track I'd played.
Jesus.
And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this is what?
Yeah.
And then one of them completely froze, so you couldn't see the screen. I couldn't see what was playing.
Yeah.
And then the other one just wasn't working. So I said to the tech at the time, I'm really sorry. And they were setting up the Nexus 900 in the 2000s at time for the next DJ. And I was like, can I move on to those decks? Because these are not working. And he was like, no, they're for the next DJ. I was like, that's cool. I've still got another 90 minutes. So please, can I move on to those like decks? And he was like, no, there's nothing wrong with these. And I was like, there is something wrong with them. This has happened 3 times now. I can't keep going back to the fucking first track. Like, this is not okay. And then he saw that the one had frozen. He's just like, I'm sure he'd be fine. There's other two decks there. And then just totally dismissed me. And then I had to look at my manager, who you know. And I was like, Terry, I don't know what to do. Like, this is horrendous. Like, they're not working. Like, what do I do? And she's like, she spoke to him, and she's also a woman. And he was so dismissive of us, this kid. And he was very young, and not like patronizing when I call him the kid. He was very young. But also, I just don't think he just didn't take us seriously because we were women. So she had to run over to the other stage, get the stage manager from that stage, who ran back over and was like, for fuck's sake, put her on their fucking other decks now. And he was so pissed off. They kept the decks where they were, and the ones he was setting up on the side, that he refused to move them on stage until I'd set up. So I had to, like a ninja, run from this deck to the other ones, set up, and then like have my track in here and like listen to bring in that track from the other fucking side of the stage. And I was like, this is us. And then I had to get Terry to bring that track out whilst I like my one bang in. And it was just horrible. And I remember just coming away so stressed. And then
he just sounds like a massive cunt. Like, I'm sorry, like, I understand.
For whatever reason,
I understand the whole female thing as well, which obviously I can never relate to. I never experienced that. But like,
well, Tini Gesler had been on before me, and she was like, babe, these are fucked. Like, just warning you now. And she had fed back. And we did say to like the guys at Warehouse Special, like, that was awful. And the guy didn't listen to us, and we should never have had to experience that.
Never.
And they like texted us and we heard you had a couple of technical problems. Sorry about that. And I was like, technical problem. And then we like wrote it down. And then the next morning they came back to us and they were like, oh yeah, Ilario Alicante had the same thing. We're so sorry.
Yeah.
It was like, it shouldn't take 3 DJs to feedback about your stage manager that he's not listening. And it was just, it was such a shame because that is such an iconic venue, a venue that I have loved from day dot. I've been there many a time raving, seeing my favorite DJs. I've wanted my first experience as a DJ at that venue to be amazing. And don't get me wrong, since I've had some of the best gigs of my career there. But it was, I just always remember that moment. It's like, why is he not taking me seriously? Why is he not listening to me? Is it because I'm a woman? I don't know. And then another horrible experience I had was a huge gig that I had in Ibiza for the first time. And a massive DJ who will rename, I was like 2 songs to the end, it was fucking popping off. I'd worked my fucking butt off for this set. Everyone was having the time of life, and they walked into the booth, and the booth was roped off, no one was there apart from behind, like they were behind the ropes. He let himself through the ropes, walked into the decks, went straight onto the decks, and then tried to turn the bass up. And I looked at him, and I got him, I was like, what were you doing? And he's like, oh, I thought the bass wasn't turned up. And I was like, it is, I've just got the monitors down. And he's like, right, okay. And then he turned around and walked away. And like his girlfriend at the time was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it was so disrespectful. And I just thought, if I walked into his booth when he was DJing and went up to the mixer and turned his fucking bass up or did anything, that would not be okay. So why was it okay for him to do that to me?
He also sounds like a massive cunt. I hate people like
that. He felt really bad about it after, because he was like, you're amazing, you should be like touring America and da da da. And I was like, now you fucking say that because you know what you just did was a dickish move. And I said to him, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
What was that? Because I wouldn't do that to you. So why have you just done that to me? And he was really shocked because I can hold my own, but also I said it in like conflict. But in that, I was so enraged that he had like, it was almost like someone had come in and just like gone, pop, you're not allowed to have this good a time. Sorry.
Oh, I'm going to
just bring you down a notch. And it was like, and I remember like ranting about it, and everyone was like, name the DJ. And I was like, it's not about naming the DJ, but it's just recognizing like we're allowed to have our moment.
Totally.
Whether we're male, female, non-binary, or however you recognize yourself, like it's not okay to just diminish someone's light like that.
Well, also if you're a headliner, like, I'm sorry, if you're headlining and the support DJ is absolutely smashing it, you should be applauding that person, whoever that is, and like,
well, it wasn't even their
them.
Gig. They weren't headlining that gig. They were just there.
They were, what? So
yes. This is what I mean.
Why did
it wasn't their gig? They were just there in Ibiza.
Punch him in the face.
And they just took upon themselves.
Punch him in the face.
And like, there is a video that one of my managers got when they turned around and me just going behind their back. And I'm like, if that video ever sees the light of day, then everyone will know who did this video and they'll hate me forever. But there's been a couple of, but in, like, you know, on the other spectrum, I've had the most wonderful 2 years. Like the pandemic, when it hit, I had like 32 gigs in the diary, and that was the most I'd had in my career in like a summer. And then obviously everything got taken away from us. I remember just thinking, that's it. My opportunity's gone. You know, and our lives did go on hold for 2 years. And I was really worried coming out of the pandemic that no one would book me or give me those gigs again. And, you know, some opportunities have gone away that were there before. But then on the other side, like, so many other opportunities have arrived.
Totally.
And I think, I don't want that to be the headline of people being dicks. But actually, on 95% of the time, the DJ community is amazing and lovely and so supportive. Like, especially when I started producing, I was really nervous and a bit clueless. Like, I'm not very good with like the terminology of stuff. I'd like message my mate and be like, what's this like space sound you get in a disco track that goes boo, 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 boo. And like, okay. I think that's like a synth. And I'm like, okay. And even now, like, I was like trying to get this, like, it sound, I don't even like, this is what I mean. So I'd heard, have you heard Manda Moore's Bacante? It's like one of my favorite songs at the moment. It came out in Hot Creations.
No.
And it has this like, like kind of vocal, and I was like, how did she make that? Because it sounds like almost like a hyena, but it sounds like someone's vocals, but then actually apparently it's like something she's done on like a Moog, and I was like, great. But I just I'm so clueless, but I love the fact that I can like text my mate and be like, this is fucking not working, it's just like muted all the vocals, and they're like, yeah, you've just done this, and I was like, thanks.
I think the thing is though, like, naivety, and this, I'm saying this in the nicest possible way, naivety when you're creating is the best way to create, because there's no
I can agree more.
There's no parameters, and there's nothing in your mind telling you that, oh, you should be doing it this way or you should be doing it that way. And I think some of the best music in the world gets made by people that don't know how to make music technically. And
I can agree more. I started doing production lessons.
Yeah.
And the teacher was amazing. He was so
rigid.
He was so, this is how you make a house record. You know, you have your 8-bar intro, and then you have, and I'm like, but I don't really want to stick to like the formula. And so actually I kind of stopped doing the lessons and started just watching loads of YouTube videos, which can also really, you know, influence how you go. Like, I was watching a lot of the Disclosure Twitch streams.
Oh, cool,
and
yeah.
I suddenly find myself like going down a hole of like making like Disclosure tunes, and I was like, no, that's not me. but I think you're so right. I made a remix recently for Lena Punk's. And I literally sat in my kitchen and was just like, I just want to fucking make something that doesn't sound like anything I've ever made before.
Yeah.
And I just took the vocal that she had and completely warped it, and then just did this really industrial kind of like synth flip. And it was like, and it hasn't been like a huge record or anything, but it's the one that I'm really proud of, because it just was me like not giving a fuck and not like conforming to like what everyone said. They loved it. And like, it's the one that I randomly get a message on and be like, mate, this is sick.
Yeah.
And it's because it isn't like, not, I don't, sometimes you hear it quite a lot on the radio, and then the formula of making a hit dance record, and there's nothing against them. It's what makes people brings people a lot of joy, but I don't ever want my music to sound like Dance by Numbers.
Totally. Totally agree. I think it's whatever you decide what you want to do in your career and how you want to be perceived to the general public is like, let's be honest, Calvin Harris is the best hit maker of our time, right?
But his tunes can go far and wide and like actually what they sound like, which is what I really respect.
They can, but there's still a formula to write and hit that bit that good. Like, there's still a formula to that, and he's the best at doing it, which is why he's so good at doing it, and which is why he's had countless number ones and is the best producer of our time in the dance pop world.
100%.
But I think also by creating your own formula and by creating your own kind of lane, like, it allows you to be you, and like, you can still go and make a bunch of stuff, but people will still know it's you. And it's just for me, it's been the same for me. It's like, it's taken me this long to get to where I'm at, and I'm still very far away from where I want to be. But because you're not copying anybody, and because you're not trying to be anybody else, you're literally just being you. Like, every record is your record. It's not like, oh, I've heard a record like this before. It's like, no, this is an Ariel record, or this is a Will Clark record, or this is whatever record. Because I think there's so many carbon copies, and you hear that in the radio world, and I hear that as a DJ, and you hear it as a DJ, and we all know what people do to have success. But for me, it's like, the real artistry is like being yourself. Like, look at Arctic Monkeys. There will never be another Arctic Monkeys.
No, exactly.
They are
my biggest struggle that I tie with when it comes to production, and everyone's like, what's your sound? I'm like, well, it's me behind the decks. And like, what do you mean? Yeah. I was like, well, if you come and see me DJ, I'll go everywhere, like, and give you everything. And that's what I want for my tracks. Like, as long as it's just me and being high energy.
Yeah.
But some people are like, what's your sound though? I'm like, this whole pressure to have your sound. Like, I love a real Latin beat through, like, you know, a tech house, like, you know, record. Or I also love a huge vocal and like a more 90s anthemic vibe. But I also am like a woman of extremes. I enjoy that real, complete, chill, melodic house. And there's this thing of like, I'm constantly putting myself in like, what is your sound? Which, like, none of my records sound the same. But then I think about it, I'm like, well, none of Patrick Topping's records sound the same.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I've heard Jimmy Jones make everything from a house record to a proper gnarly, like, tech number. It's like, I don't know why we necessarily have to be like, this is your sound and this is what I'm going to make every time. I just, like, when I start making a track, I don't go in with like, it needs to sound like this.
Yeah.
I mean, I have certain things that I always put in, like, I always put crickets in my music. I've just got a thing about putting crickets in my music. And someone's like, why crickets? I'm like, I don't know. I think it's because I heard it in the Ariana Grande tune Position.
That's the first time I heard about crickets being in a record.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
There's so many cricket sounds you can find in Splays and, oh, mate, you can have a field day. But it's lovely because I was like, maybe it's because I when I was a kid, like, we didn't get to go abroad much.
Yeah.
And when we did, it was like a really big deal. And I just remember like the big difference of being holidaying in the UK and holidaying abroad was like fucking crickets everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. We don't get them in the UK, do we?
No, you don't hear them at night.
Thank God. Yeah, no, going back to that sound thing though, it's, I think from, tell me if you disagree with me, but I think also where you're at in your career, where you have a career, you're a successful radio DJ and you tour. And I think what a lot of people do is they go from wanting to be a DJ. How do I become a successful DJ? Okay, I have to make music. Okay, I want to be part of this crew, so I have to make records that fit with this crew.
This sound.
And then I can then become a full-time DJ. And then I think that's what people do, is by getting their sound, is they're actually, this isn't for everybody, but they're making music to become successful, to fit in with the sound. It was exactly the same for me. Like, when I first signed to Dirty Bird, was like, I want to be part of Dirty Bird Records at that time.
Yeah.
I made records that fit Dirty Bird. Was that truly me? Yes, I guess it was at that time in my career, but it's evolved and now I write whatever I write. But I think that's where you're in a bit of a different situation, where you're a radio DJ and a DJ and a producer, but like, you don't have to fit in with anybody else because you have a career and people know who you are.
I suppose so, but I'd like, I don't know. I think out of everything that I do, the production side of things is definitely where my confidence lacks.
Yeah.
Because I've only been doing it for just over 2 years. And even then it was like a thing that I'd been attempting for ages, and I tried it on Ableton. And I just, Ableton and me just didn't get on. Like, yeah, yeah. It was like another language that I couldn't learn.
Mm.
And then a good friend of mine got some. He's a wicked producer and DJ. He was like, why don't you try Logic? Yeah. See, that's like just works better for you. And it did, like, instantly. And it's definitely those things of like, I went into studios of like mates and like, or like people that people had recommended, like learn the craft. What I found from those sessions is that like what I wanted to do wasn't like listened to, or like if I was like adding my input, it kind of was almost like dismissed because I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. And rightly so. But that was where the whole thing was like, but what if I did add that? Who says we can't add this thing on top? What if like, why don't we just try it and see if it works? And then made me realize like I really just want to make, not music myself. I love going to studio with friends. I've just finished a track with a mate who's like helps me big time. But definitely like starting a project, I'm just doing myself now, because what I find is like often the ideas that I want to do, people are like, oh no, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
I don't really ever
Which
want
is
to
weird.
Be
confined. It's so weird. That's so weird to me that people were like, no, you can't do that. Because I'm like, there's no rules. There's no laws. There's like,
no,
we literally have like, we can do what the fuck we want.
And to be fair, there's other people I worked with who are like, yeah, fuck it, let's try it. Let's see what happens. Yeah. And that's great. And like my first track, Soulful, came from, I went down to the Mortimores, who had two brothers from Bristol. And a friend said, like, look, they're so good. They've been producing for over 14 years. Just go in and like watch them and see what they do. And like, you can like pick up some things. And then we just ended up vibing in the studio, and I'd find this like, bah, 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 bah. And then we just like went from there. And everything that we're doing, I was like, let's try this. And I said, we didn't go in to make a record. I went in to like watch what they do and like learn some bits from them. And then actually we came out with this fucking banger record, and they ended up getting signed to Thief of Dance straight away. And I was like, whoa. Yeah. And then I was catapulted in as well of like having to be a good producer. And I was like, fuck, I really need to like learn properly. Like, and actually what I found now is like, my way of like escaping from, there's a lot of noise in my world in terms of like, I have to be on constantly on the radio, and I have to be on camera all the time. I have to be on when I'm doing like presentation. Like, you just have to be on. And I was finding those moments of like mute and silence. And actually, that's my moment where I'm with my laptop and just like making some beats. And I'm not putting myself under pressure to be like, this has to get signed. It's just like, this is my way of just like cutting out the noise and just having some me time. Whereas like my kind of process to that before was putting on like Selling Sunsets or something, because I didn't have to think about anything.
Yeah, totally. But I think that's really beautiful, because it's like you're being able to create the art and also use it as like a therapeutic kind of process, which also is like the best way to write music. Like I don't do it like that, sadly, anymore. And I have changed a few ways how I write, but like for a long period of time, like I haven't written dance music for myself for a very long time. Like, it's because it's just like not fun to me. It's like,
no,
it's like very formulaic in the way I think of how I write a dance record and things like that. And I know that will change. I know I'll get through it, but like, I love the concept of like getting excited to write music. And
yeah, it's just, I suppose, because I'm still discovering so much. Like, you've been making music for so long now. Yeah. Like, you are a master of your craft. It's almost like you have that knowledge like so full, whereas I'm a bit like, how do I do this? And where does this go? And why is that not working? Whereas like you probably don't have those questions constantly.
I'm jealous because I know your shit. I want it to be how you are, though, because there was always a period of where you're like, where you learn stuff and you make happy accidents. And
I love a happy accident.
Yeah, that's the best.
I just made this like really sad like synth, like this long synth note once, and it was like, it sounded like, I wanted to pick a synth that sounded like a violin.
Yeah.
And I like just created this low note, and then someone, a Scottish artist called Joseph, who I really love, his manager were like, he really wants you to remix the song. The track's called It's Been a Little Heavy Lately. Mm. And this was the saddest like synth that noise that I'd ever made. And it was like, you say a happy accent, and I just happened to save it in a project, and I was like, I'm fucking add that really sad synth to this song that's called It's Been a Little Heavy Lately, and it's gonna be perfect. And it's just like, it was the biggest happy accent ever. I was like, oh, I knew that was gonna come in useful. Yeah. Me just like messing around and figuring out sounds. And I still have, so my only bugbear is like, I really would just love to like have more time to like produce and to make music. But what I do find is like, when I've got like a long flight or if I'm on my own, it's my favorite thing to do. The only thing is I do get a bit conscious of people looking at you and be like, oh, you're a DJ, yeah, with your laptop and your Logic open. Right. Especially on a flight to Ibiza on a Friday morning. People are like, yeah, we get it.
They're usually too fucked that they don't even know what they're talking about anyway. Like, every flight to Ibiza, they're all messed up anyway.
Or else you get the person going, oh, your DJ's like, oh, can I come along? You've got to guess this. And you're like, oh God. I don't know how to say no to this. I just, I hate letting people down. So, like, I'm the worst for, like, if someone messaged me and they're like, can I get guesses? And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, why not? And then they're like a bot or something. And I'm like, oh, they actually wanted to come and see me.
Also, like, a lot of people must know you, though, through Radio 1 as well. So you must get,
I'm quite a private person. Like, it's a very hard line to walk. I think it's why I stopped doing TV, because I realised actually how uncomfortable TV made me. Like, I don't mind doing stuff like the Glastonbury coverage and Brits things, because it's what I'm loving and passionate about, is music and festivals and bands and DJs. But I've always been very aware. I've never wanted to be famous. It's never anything that I've ever wanted in my life. And actually I've seen firsthand how horrendous what fame can do to someone's life.
Yeah.
And it doesn't often bring joy. Mm. It brings a lot of, you know, horrible stuff. And some people really enjoy that attention. I'm actually quite, dare I say it, my mum would say otherwise, but I'm actually quite a shy person.
Yeah.
I was on a plane recently and I was chatting away to my friend, just like having a nice time. And it was like really innocent, like morning journey, you know, coming out to Ibiza with me. And then I out the corner of my eye, I saw this guy's phone and he was passing it to his friends and they were all giggling. And then I just saw my name on his phone. It was like Ariel Free, DJ Radio 1. And I suddenly then became really conscious that they were talking about me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I've just been having like the most open conversation with my friend, probably about tampons and whatever, like girl stuff. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I didn't really want people to be listening in on. And I was just like, it suddenly shocked me.
Yeah.
And it made me feel really uncomfortable. And then I became very paranoid about what I was aware. But then also, like, I did this cycle challenge for Comet Relief for Radio 1 this year, and
that was mental, probably the most
it was probably the most public thing I've ever done, but it was also the most exposed and vulnerable I'd ever been.
Yeah,
it was a challenge that broke me within the first day. And
tell people about
on my early breath,
tell people about it.
So every year we do a big Comet Relief challenge. Comet Relief is an amazing charity that don't just like give money to one charity. They fund loads of small charities worldwide and not just in the UK. And they're really important because it's those smaller charities that really need that funding. And every year they do like a Comet Relief challenge. And for the last few years, it'd been the boys. And I had gone to the bosses and said, look, if you're doing another Comet Relief challenge, I want to do a DJ marathon. I want to do a rave-a-thon for 48 hours. I would DJ for 2 days if I can, and I'll just do it. And they were like, well, actually, that sounds like too much fun. Why don't we make it more physically challenging? And so what they did is we came up with a concept of me cycling whilst DJing. Originally, it was going to be a tandem and like other DJs could jump on with me and we'd go back to back and whatnot. And then actually, they were like, no, why don't we get the big group cycle bikes? You often see them on like Hendus city tours. The thing about these bikes is they weigh 1.5 tons without anyone on it anyway. 10 people can sit down, 8 people can cycle. And then we had 4 producers in the middle, 2 producers in the middle, and then 1 driver, 1 person directing, and then a safety person back. So we had 14 people on the bike at time, 8 of which could cycle. It didn't have a motor. And we did 10 hours a day for 5 days. So 5 different cities, 10 hours a day, 50 hours in total. And after the first day, not to be graphic, but my legs were cut apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it wasn't a saddle that was made for endurance. I had been training and, you know, I'd had all the bum butter in the world and padded, like, you know, cycle seats and padded shorts. But my legs were cut apart and it was like very painful. Mm. But you got through it. But then as the week went on, the weather got horrendous. It was like something out of a film. We went from having like quite nice weather to suddenly it was like -3 and snow and sleet and high winds, like battering against us. And I've always prided myself to bring people joy. That's what I love about my job. I want to bring people joy. I want to introduce them to their favorite new song. I want to just put a smile on their face. And what was really beautiful was that all the people who listened to me at the crack of dawn in the morning, who, you know, are often on their own and you know, I've been there for them, really rallied around for me. And, you know, there was so many messages where they were like, Ariel's got me through like the darkest period of the night when I've been on my own. So why am I going to get behind it? God, it makes me cry thinking about it. But it was, there was just some amazing people that I met through that. I met an amazing woman called Tina, who said because of Comet Relief, like, she still had a husband and a father to her children, and she came on the bike the last day as a surprise. And the last day was horrendous. Like, everyone was like, you'll get to last day and the adrenaline will get you through it, and it wasn't that at all. It was the worst weather and it was broken and I could hardly move. And I just really didn't want to let everyone down, because everyone who had donated based on me completing this 50 hours.
Of course, yeah.
And the one solace about it was that, and every 90 minutes we had new people come on the bike. So I had to be like, hey, how are you? What tune do you want to hear? But the best thing that got me through it was actually being able to DJ, and that was my focus the whole time.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that, we had half an hour where the speakers blew on like the third day, and it was the worst half hour of it, of the challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But that did expose me quite a lot in a public way that I'd never had before, because I'm on the radio, you don't know what I look like. You know my voice, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember I had to DJ in Printworks the Saturday after. It was like, they'd already picked me before we did this challenge. And I remember like walking into Printworks in London, and these like kids just running up to me, and they were like, oh my God, you're Ashley, what you did. And then they're like, these kids like later on, who were mashed up, are like guarding their face off and like calling me like their hero. And I was just like, oh God, this is so bizarre. Like,
yeah,
there was such a huge thrust of, you know, suddenly people recognizing who I am and whatnot. Also, on the other hand, people just being like, fucking hell, like, well done. Like, what you did was incredible. We raised over £600,000, which is an incredible amount of money for charity. But yeah, it's I definitely would rush back to do it again. I'm still dealing with, like, hip problems. But they were amazing commentary from that. They had this incredible physio called Nick, who just recognized, like, when I needed to
chill,
just go away, not speak to people, and he would crack me apart and make sure that I didn't have an injury that was going to last a lifetime. But there was one day, second to last year, where this girl was like, you've only got one day left, you've only got one day left, you've only got one day left, and she was right in my ear, and she's a fitness instructor, and I was like, oh, my God. And he had this thing called, like, if you ever need, you're going to want to rage, because your body is going to be so pushed to its limit.
Mm-hmm.
And he just found this little room, and I was like, and I didn't realize all the comic relief people could hear me. And I walked out, and they were just looking at me in shock, like, because I'd been really lovely up until this point. And I was like, oh, give me a break, a fucking cycle for 49 hours. I mean, definitely something I'll never forget. And just more than anything, just the amount of money we raised in the time where like money is really stretched and hard to come by. I still can't get over the generosity of people. It really highlights to me how amazing some human beings can be.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is there's something amazing about radio, and what you guys do for the community. And I think you don't necessarily realize until something like that big comes along and you get to like really, everyone can kind of give back a little bit. And I think that's what I absolutely love about the British public for that, if you know what I mean. They value
community,
yeah, they value what you guys do so much. And we take it all for granted sometimes. But I think when you get the opportunity to give back and to kind of see what people do, like, even if people are poor, they will give. And I think it's
yeah,
so,
and not more than anything. Like, there was someone who came, she like jumped to the train to join the last bike, and she said she phoned her boss on the bike and was like, for fuck's sake, like the whole of the UK is rallying around this girl, and you've not even fucking given any money from this company, and you're worth millions. For fuck's sake, like let's donate something from the company.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, we were like £1,000 away from like a certain target point, And then, yeah, she'd be like, British, like, you need to give us £1,000 now. She really had to bully, like, this guy. And to be fair, he did it in the end, bless him. But I was thinking, I was like, it's so funny, like, my company could probably afford the charity donation, whereas, you know, the women who came on the bike and said that they were really struggling still managed to, like, put £5 in. And I wanted to give it back. Like, it was the worst is when this little girl came up to me and she gave me a card. And, oh, God, she'd put her pocket money in it. And I was like, oh. Like,
lush.
You don't need to do that. You're like seven. Like, you know, but it was so lovely. God, he's going to make me cry again. I mean, that was the worst thing. And the whole of the UK just saw me crying for 5 days. And I don't cry in front of anyone ever.
Yeah.
I think that was really shocking for people who listen to my show, because I'm usually all like, yeah, let's do it. And no matter how rubbish it is, we're going to get through it. And suddenly they just saw, me at my most vulnerable. And I just wasn't able to hide
totally
my emotions. It was just quite shocking for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's when everyone was like, right, we need to help out. But, you know, it was like a brain surgery or anything. There's loads of other people out there doing much bigger things.
I also think it's really important for people to see that. I think there's a level of, we all talk about mental health and we all talk about struggles of life and things like that. And people, we can talk about it, but people don't really see it and see the struggle.
No, like it's definitely.
It's very behind closed doors.
Definitely.
And I think it's really important. So what you did is fucking amazing.
100%. I mean, I think one message that stood out for me was this guy who's like, Ariel, I'm a 56-year-old trucker. I listen to you every morning on the show. He's like, I've never cried so much in my life, and I feel like I've held a lifetime of tears back.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, not that I wanted other people to cry, but there was definitely, I think, a thing of everyone just being like relating.
Yeah.
Relating when you're like pushed to your limits or like struggling and whatnot. And also the stories that you hear when we do those comic relief things, you hear about the people who have been helped by the charity, and it really hammers home like just what some people have had to go through.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think we should call it quits on that. I think it's a really nice way to end this. Thank you so much for coming on, mate. I know we could carry on talking for hours, but let's call it. How can people get in touch with you on social media? How can people listen to you? All that good jazz.
So you can listen to me on Radio 1, 8 till 10 p.m. at the moment, until September, which is UK time. I guess I know this goes out internationally. I'm pretty much Ariel Free on all my socials, which is not Ariel's, it's A-R-I-E-L-L-E, because that's the correct spelling if you're a female. So Ariel Free and Instagram and TikTok and SoundCloud and Twitter, people still use that, and YouTube. My label is Free Your Mind, which I'm always open to getting tunes for if you make like house or disco records or tech house, and I'm actually open to all genres, but that started going and got some really nice signings at the moment. So music at freeyourmindclub.com.
Amazing, mate, thank you so much. Keep safe.
Thank
and
you.
I will see you very soon.
I feel like I'm just in a therapy session. I'm such an oversharer, sorry. Jesus.
No, it was great. I really enjoyed it, and I think a lot of people get a lot from it. So thanks
for having me, mate. I've watched it before, so I was like, this is great. Tara's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, fuck yes.
Yeah. And that's a wrap. Big love to Ariel for coming on. Please go follow her. Go check her DJ sets out. They are always wild. She's great. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe. Share it to your mates. Keep safe. Until next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.